This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Mistake, Book 2 in the Off-Campus series, written by L. Kennedy, performed by Lorelei Avalon and Lee Samuels.
Chapter 1. Logan. April. Lusting over your best friend's girlfriend sucks. First off, there's the awkward factor. As in, it's really fucking awkward. I can't speak for all men, but I'm pretty sure that no guy wants to leave his bedroom and bump into the girl of his dreams after she's just spent the whole night in his best friend's arms. Then there's the self-loathing element. This one's a given, because it's kind of hard not to hate yourself when you're fantasizing about the love of your best friend's life. At the moment, the awkwardness is definitely winning out. See, I live in a house with very thin walls, which means I can hear every breathy moan that leaves Hannah's mouth, every gasp and sigh, every thump of the headboard smacking the wall as someone else screws the girl I can't stop thinking about. Fun times. I'm on my bed, flat on my back and staring up at the ceiling. I'm not even pretending to scroll through my iPod library anymore. I popped the earbuds in with the intention of drowning out the sounds of Garrett and Hannah in the other room, but I still haven't pressed play. I guess I'm in the mood to torture myself tonight. Look, I'm not an idiot. I know she's in love with Garrett. I see the way she looks at him, and I see how they are together. They've been a couple for 6 months now, and not even I, the worst friend on the planet, can deny they're perfect for each other. And hell, Garrett deserves to be happy. He plays it off like he's a cocky son of a bitch. But truth is, he's a goddamn saint. The best center I've ever skated with, and the best person I've ever known. And I'm comfortable enough with my hetero status to say that if I did play for the other team, I wouldn't just fuck Garrett Graham. I'd marry him. That's what makes this a trillion times harder. I can't even hate the dude who's tapping the chick I want. No revenge fantasies to be had, because I don't hate Garrett, not in the slightest. A door creaks open and footsteps echo in the hallway, and I pray to God that Garrett or Hannah doesn't knock on my door, or open their mouths, for that matter, because hearing either of their voices right now will only bum me out even more. Luckily, the loud knock that rattles my doorframe comes from my other roommate, Dean, who waltzes inside without waiting for an invitation. Party at Omega Phi tonight. You down? I dive off my bed faster than you can say pathetic, because a party sounds like a fan-fucking-tastic idea right about now. Getting wasted is a surefire way to stop myself from thinking about Hannah. Actually, no. I want to get wasted and screw someone's brains out. That way, if one of those activities doesn't help me with my don't-think-about-Hannah goal, the other can serve as backup. Hell yeah, I answer, already fumbling around for a shirt. I slip a clean t-shirt over my head and ignore the twinge of pain in my left arm, which is still sore as shit from the bone-jarring body check I took at the championship game last week. But the hit was totally worth it. For the third consecutive year, Breyer's hockey team secured another Frozen Four victory. I guess you can call it the ultimate hat trick. And all the players, myself included, are still reaping the rewards of being three-time national champions. Dean, one of my fellow defensemen, calls it the three P's of victory: parties, praise, and pussy. It's a pretty fair assessment of the situation, because I've been on the receiving end of all three since our big win. You gonna be the DD? I ask as I throw a black hoodie over my t-shirt and zip it up. My buddy snorts. Did you really just ask me that? I roll my eyes. Right. Whatever was I thinking? The last time Dean Hayward De Laurentiis was sober at a party was never. Dude drinks like a fish or gets higher than a kite every time he leaves the house. And if you think that affects his performance on the ice in any way, then think again. He's one of those rare creatures who can party like past day Robert Downey Jr., and somehow be as successful and revered as present-day Robert Downey Jr. Don't worry, Tuck's the DD, Dean tells me, referring to our other roommate, Tucker. The pussy's still hung over from last night. Said he needs a break. Yeah, I don't exactly blame him. Off-season training doesn't start for another couple weeks, and we've all been enjoying the time off a little too much. But that's what happens when you're riding a Frozen Four high. Last year after we won, I was drunk for 2 weeks straight. I'm not looking forward to the off-season. Strength and conditioning and all the hard work it takes to stay in shape are exhausting. But it's even more exhausting when you're working 10-hour shifts at the same time. It's not like I have a choice, though. The workouts are necessary prep for the upcoming season. And the work? Well, I made a promise to my brother. And no matter how sick to my stomach it makes me, I can't renege on it. Jeff will skin me alive if I don't fulfill my end of the deal. Our designated driver waits at the front door when Dean and I come downstairs. A reddish-brown beard devours Tucker's entire face, giving him a werewolf vibe, but he's been determined to try out this new look ever since a chick he met at a party last week told him he had a baby face. You know that Yeti beard doesn't make you look more manly, right? Dean says cheerfully as we walk out the door. Tuck shrugs. I was going for rugged, actually. I snicker. Well, it's not that either, babyface. You look like a mad scientist. He flips up his middle finger as he heads for the driver's side of my truck. I settle in the passenger seat while Dean climbs into the pickup bed, saying he wants some fresh air. I think he just wants the wind to mess up his hair in that tousled, sexed-up way girls drop their panties for. FYI, Dean is nauseatingly vain. But he also looks like a male model, so maybe he's allowed to be vain. Tucker starts the engine, and I drum my fingers against my thighs, itching to get going. A lot of students in the Greek system piss me off with their elitist attitudes. But I'm willing to overlook that because, well, hell. Because if party throwing was an Olympic sport, every frat and sorority house at Briar would be a gold medalist. As Tuck reverses out of the driveway, my gaze rests on Garrett's black Jeep, all shiny in its parking space while its owner spends the night with the coolest girl on the planet and enough. This obsession with Hannah Wells is really starting to mess with my head. I need to get laid. ASAP. Tucker is noticeably quiet during the drive to Omega Phi. He might also be frowning, but it's hard to tell considering someone shaved off all of Hugh Jackman's body hair and pasted it on Tuck's face. What's with the silent treatment? I ask lightly. His gaze shifts toward me to offer a sour look, then shifts right back to the road. Oh, come on. Is this about all the shit we're giving you about the beard? Exasperation shoots through me. Because that's like the first chapter of Beards for Dummies, bro. If you grow a mountain man beard, your friends will make fun of you. End of chapter. It's not about the beard, he mutters. I wrinkle my forehead. Okay, but you are pissed about something. When he doesn't respond, I push a little harder. What's going on with you? His annoyed eyes meet mine. With me? Nothing. With you? So much, I don't even know where to start. He curses softly. You need to stop this shit, man. Now I'm genuinely confused. Because as far as I can tell, all I've done in the past 10 minutes is look forward to a party. Tucker notices the confusion on my face and clarifies in a grim tone. This thing with Hannah. Although my shoulders stiffen, I try to keep my expression vague. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yep, I've chosen to lie, which is nothing new for me, actually. It seems like all I've done since I came to Briar is lie. I'm totally destined for the NHL, going pro all the way. I love spending my summer as a grease monkey in my dad's shop. It's great pocket money. I'm not lusting over Hannah. She's dating my best friend. Lies, lies, and more lies. Because in every one of those instances, the truth is a total bummer. And the last thing I want is for my friends and teammates to feel sorry for me. Save that bullshit for G, Tucker retorts. And by the way, you're lucky he's distracted with all this lovey-dovey stuff, Because if he wasn't, he'd definitely notice the way you're acting. Yeah? And what way is that? I can't stop the edge in my voice or the defensive set of my jaw. I hate that Tuck knows I have feelings for Hannah. I hate even more that he finally decided to bring up the subject after all these months. Why can't he leave it alone? The situation is already shitty enough without having someone call me on it. Seriously? Do you want me to list it off for you? Fine. A dark cloud floats through his eyes as he begins to recite every fucking thing I felt so guilty about. You leave the room whenever the two of them enter it. You hide in your bedroom when she stays over. If you guys are in the same room, you stare at her when you think nobody is looking. You... Okay, I interrupt. I get it. And don't get me started on your man-whoring, Tucker grumbles. You've always been a player, but dude, you've hooked up with 5 chicks this week. So? So it's Thursday. 5 girls in 4 days. Do the fucking math, John. Oh shit. He first named me. Tucker only calls me John when I've really pissed him off. Except now he's pissed me off, so I first name him right back. What's wrong with that, John? Yep, we're both John. I guess we should take a blood oath and form a club or something. I'm 21 years old, I continue irritably. I'm allowed to hook up. No, I should be hooking up, because that's what college is all about. Having fun and getting laid and enjoying the fuck out of yourself before you go out in the real world and your life turns to shit. You really want to pretend all these hookups are just some rite of passage in the college experience? Tucker shakes his head, then lets out a breath and softens his tone. You can't screw her out of your system, man. You could sleep with 100 women tonight, and it still wouldn't make a difference. You need to accept that it's not going to happen with Hannah, and move on. He's absolutely right. I'm well aware that I've been wallowing in my own bullshit and bagging chicks left and right as a distraction. And I'm equally aware that I need to stop partying myself into oblivion, that I need to let go of the tiny little sliver of hope that something might happen, and simply accept that it won't. Maybe I'll get started on that tomorrow, though. Tonight, I'm sticking to my original plan. Get wasted, get laid, and to hell with everything else.
Grace. I started my freshman year of college as a virgin. I'm beginning to think I'll be ending it as one too. Not that there's anything wrong with being a card-carrying member of the V Club. So what if I'm about to turn 19? I'm hardly an old maid, and I'm certainly not going to be tarred and feathered on this street for still having an intact hymen. Besides, it's not like I haven't had opportunities to lose my virginity this year. Since I came to Brier University, my best friend has dragged me to more parties than I can count. Guys have flirted with me, sure. A few of them straight up tried to seduce me. One even sent me a picture of his penis with the caption, "It's all yours, baby," which was... fine, it was super gross, but I'm sure if I'd truly liked him, I might have been, flattered by the gesture, maybe. But I wasn't attracted to any of those guys, and unfortunately, all the ones who do catch my eye never even look my way. Until tonight. When Ramona announced we were going to a frat party, I didn't have high hopes for meeting anyone. It seems like every time we go to Greek Row, the frat boys just try to sweet-talk me and Ramona into making out. But tonight, I've actually met a guy I kinda sorta like. His name is Matt, he's cute, and he's not giving off any douchebag vibes. Not only is he somewhat sober, but he also speaks in full sentences and hasn't said the word broski even once since we started talking. Or rather, since he started talking. I haven't said much, but I'm perfectly content to stand there and listen because it gives me time to admire his chiseled jawline and the adorable way his blonde hair curls under his ears. To be honest, it's probably better if I don't talk. Cute guys make me nervous, like tongue-tied, total brain malfunction nervous. All my filters shut off, and suddenly I'm telling them about the time I peed my pants in the third grade during a field trip to the maple syrup factory, or how I'm scared of puppets and have mild OCD that could possibly drive me to tidy up your room the moment you turn your head. So, yeah, it's better if I simply smile and nod and toss out the occasional, "Oh, really?" so they know I'm not a mute. Except sometimes that's not possible, especially when the cute guy in question says something that requires an actual answer. "Wanna go outside and smoke this?" Matt pulls a joint from the pocket of his button-down shirt and holds it in front of me. "I'd light up here, but Mr. President will kick me out of the frat if I do." I shift awkwardly. No thanks. "You don't smoke weed?" "No, I mean, I have, but I don't do it often. It makes me feel all loopy." He smiles, and two gorgeous dimples appear. "That's kind of the point of weed." "Yeah, I guess. But it makes me really tired, too. Oh, and every time I smoke it, I end up thinking about this PowerPoint presentation my dad forced me to watch when I was 13. It had all these statistics about the effects of weed on your brain cells and how, contrary to popular belief, marijuana actually is highly addictive. And after every slide, he'd glare at me and say, "Do you want to lose your brain cells, Grace? Do you?" Matt stares at me, and in my head there's a voice shouting, "Abort!" But it's too late. My internal filter has failed me once again, and words keep popping out of my mouth. But I guess that's not as bad as what my mom did. She tries to be the cool parent, so when I was 15, she drove me to this dark parking lot and pulled out a joint and announced that we were going to smoke it together. It was like a scene out of The Wire. Wait, I've never actually seen The Wire. It's about drugs, right? Anyway, I sat there panicking the whole time because I was convinced we were going to get arrested. And meanwhile, my mom kept asking me how I was feeling and whether or not I was enjoying the pot. Miraculously, my lips finally stopped moving. But Matt's eyes have already glazed over. Well, he clumsily waves the joint around. "I'm gonna go smoke this. I'll see you later." I manage to hold in my sigh until he's gone, then release the heavy breath and give myself a mental slap on the wrist. Damn it. I don't know why I bother trying to talk to guys. I go into every conversation nervous I'm gonna embarrass myself, and then I end up embarrassing myself because I'm nervous. Doomed from the start. With another sigh, I head downstairs and search the main floor for Ramona. The kitchen is full of kegs and frat boys, ditto for the dining room. The living room is packed with very loud, very drunk guys and a sea of scantily clad girls. I applaud them for their bravery because the weather outside is frigid and the front door has been opening and closing all night, causing cold air to circulate through the house. Me? I'm nice and toasty in my skinny jeans and tight sweater. I don't see my friend anywhere. As hip-hop music blasts out of the speakers at a deafening volume, I fish my phone out of my purse to check the time and discover that it's close to midnight. Even after 8 months at Briar, I still experience a teeny sense of glee every time I stay out past 11, which was my curfew when I lived at home. My dad was a real stickler for curfews. Actually, he's a real stickler for everything. I doubt he's ever broken a rule in his life, which makes me wonder how he and Mom managed to stay married as long as they did. My free spirit mother is the polar opposite of my stuffy, strict father. But I guess that just proves that the whole opposites attract theory has some merit. Gracie! A female voice shrieks over the music, and the next thing I know, Ramona appears and throws her arms around me in a tight hug. When she pulls back, I take one look at her shining eyes and flushed cheeks and know she's drunk. She's also as scantily clad as most of the other girls in the room, her short skirt barely covering her upper thighs. her red halter top revealing a serious amount of cleavage, and the heels of her leather boots are so high I have no clue how she can walk in them. She looks gorgeous, though, and she's drawing a ton of appreciative stares as she links her arm through mine. I'm pretty sure that when people see us standing side by side, they're scratching their heads and wondering how on earth we could possibly be friends. Sometimes I wonder the same thing. In high school, Ramona was the fun-loving badass who smoked cigarettes behind the building, and I was the good girl who edited the school newspaper and organized all the charity events. If we hadn't been next-door neighbors, Ramona and I probably wouldn't have known the other existed, but walking to school together every day had led to a friendship of convenience, which had then turned into a real bond. So real that when we were looking at colleges, we made sure to apply to all the same schools. And when we both got into Briar, we asked my father to speak to the residence office and arrange for us to be roommates. But even though our friendship started off strong this year, I can't deny that we've drifted apart a little. Ramona has been so obsessed with hooking up and being popular. It's all she ever talks about. And lately, I'm finding that she kind of annoys me. Crap. Even thinking it makes me feel like a shitty friend. I saw you go upstairs with Matt, she hisses in my ear. Did you guys hook up? No, I say glumly. I think I scared him off. Oh no, you told him about your puppet phobia, didn't you? She demands before heaving an exaggerated sigh. Babe, you've got to stop revealing all your crazy up front. Seriously, save all that stuff for later when you're in a relationship with a guy and it's harder for him to run away. I can't help but laugh. Thanks for the advice. So are you ready to go or should we stay a while longer? I glance around the room again. My gaze lands in the corner where two girls in jeans and bras are making out while one of the Omega Phi guys films the passionate display with his iPhone. The sight makes me stifle a groan. $10 says that video will wind up on one of those free porn sites, and the poor girls probably won't find out about it until years from now, when one of them is about to marry a senator and the press digs up all her embarrassing dirt. I wouldn't mind going now, I admit. Yeah, I guess I'm cool with it, too. I raise my eyebrows. Since when are you cool with leaving a party before midnight? A frown puckers her lips. Not much point in staying. Someone already beat me to him. I don't bother asking who she's talking about. It's the same guy she's been talking about since the first day of the semester. Dean Hayward De Laurentiis. Ramona has been obsessed with a gorgeous junior ever since she bumped into him at one of the campus coffee houses. Like, seriously obsessed. She's dragged me to almost all the Briar home games just to watch Dean in action. I have to admit, the guy is hot. He's also a major player, according to the gossip mill. But unfortunately for Ramona, Dean doesn't date freshmen or sleep with them, which is all she really wants from him anyway. Ramona has never gone out with anybody for more than a week. The only reason she even wanted to come to this party tonight was because she heard that Dean would be here. But clearly the guy isn't fucking around with that no freshman rule. No matter how many times Ramona throws herself at him, he always leaves with somebody else. Let me just use the washroom first, I tell her. Meet you outside? Okay, but be quick. I told Jasper we're leaving and he's waiting in the car. She darts off toward the front door, leaving me with a prickle of resentment. Nice that she asked me if I wanted to leave when she'd already made the decision for us. But I swallow the irritation, reminding myself that Ramona has always done that and that it never bothered me in the past. Honestly, if it wasn't for her making decisions and forcing me to step out of my comfort zone, I probably would have spent my entire high school career in the newspaper office, writing the advice column and offering life tips to students without having ever experienced life myself. Still, sometimes I wish Ramona would at least ask me what I thought about something before deciding that we should do it. The downstairs bathroom has a long line, so I weave through the crowd and head upstairs to where Matt and I had been talking before. I'm just approaching the bathroom when the door swings open and a pretty blonde saunters out. She jerks when she spots me, then offers a smug little smile and adjusts the bottom of a dress that can only be described as indecent. I can actually see the crotch of her pink panties. As my cheeks heat up, I avert my gaze in embarrassment, waiting until she's at the stairs before I reach for the doorknob. I barely get my hand on it when the door opens again and someone else walks out. My gaze collides with the most vivid blue eyes I have ever seen. It only takes a second for recognition to dawn on me, and when it does, my face burns hotter. It's John Logan. Yep. John Logan, a.k.a. the star defenseman of the hockey team. I know this is not just because Ramona has been stalking his friend Dean for months, but because his sexy, chiseled face was on the cover of the school newspaper last week. Since the team's championship win, the paper has run feature interviews with all the players, and I'm not going to lie, Logan's interview was the only one I paid attention to, because the guy is smoking hot. Like the blonde, he looks startled to find me in the hallway. And, like the blonde, he recovers quickly from his surprise and flashes me a grin. Then he zips up his pants. Oh, my God. I cannot believe he just did that. My gaze involuntarily drops to his groin, but he doesn't seem bothered by that either. He cocks a brow, shrugs, and then walks away. Wow. Okay. That should have icked me out. Forget the very obvious bathroom hookup. The zipper move alone should have placed him directly in douchebag territory. Instead, knowing he'd just fooled around with that girl in the bathroom evokes a rush of jealousy I don't expect. I'm not saying I want to have a random hookup in a bathroom, but... Fine, I'm lying. I totally want that. At least with John Logan, I do. The thought of his hands and lips all over me unleashes a flurry of hot shivers that shimmy up my spine. Why can't I fool around with guys in bathrooms? I'm in college, damn it. I'm supposed to be having fun and making mistakes and finding myself, but I haven't done jack shit this year. I've been living vicariously through Ramona, watching my bad girl best friend take risks and try new things, while I, the good girl, stand there clinging to the cautious approach to life that my father drilled into me when I was still in diapers. Well, I'm tired of being cautious, and I'm tired of being the good girl. The semester is almost over. I have 2 exams to study for and a psych paper to write, but who says I can't do all that and still squeeze some actual fun in there? There are only a few weeks left in my freshman year, and you know what? I plan on making good use of them.
Chapter 2. Logan. I've decided to ease back on the partying. And that's not just because I got so trashed last night that Tucker had to haul me over his shoulder and cart me upstairs to my bedroom because I was too dizzy to walk. Though that was a major factor in the decision-making process. So now it's Friday night, and not only did I turn down a party invite from one of the guys on the team, but I'm still nursing the same glass of whiskey I poured more than an hour ago. I also haven't taken a single hit off the joint Dean keeps shoving in my direction. We're hanging out at our place tonight, braving the early April chill as we huddle together in the small backyard. I take a drag of my cigarette while Dean Tucker and our teammate Mike Hollis pass around the joint, and I'm only half listening to Dean's incredibly raunchy recap of the sex he had last night. My mind keeps wandering back to my own hookup. The sexy-as-sin sorority sister who'd lured me into one of the upstairs bathrooms and had her way with me. I might have been drunk, and my memory might be a bit hazy, but I definitely remember fingering her until she came all over my hand, and I absolutely remember being on the receiving end of a pretty spectacular BJ. I don't plan on telling Tuck about it, though. You know, since apparently he's keeping a tally of my hookups. Nosy bastard. Wait, back up. You did what? Hollis's exclamation jars me back to the present. I sent her a dick pic. Dean says this as if it's something he does every day. Hollis gawks at him. Really? You sent her a picture of your junk? What, like some kind of fucked up sex souvenir? Nah, more like an invitation for another round, Dean answers with a grin. How the hell will that make her want to sleep with you again? Hollis sounds doubtful now. She probably thinks you're a douche. No way, dude. Chicks appreciate a nice cock shot. Trust me. Hollis presses his lips together like he's trying not to laugh. Uh-huh. Sure. I flick my ash on the grass and take another drag. Just out of curiosity, what constitutes a nice cock shot? I mean, is it the lighting? The pose? I'm being sarcastic, but Dean responds in a solemn voice. Well, the trick is, you've got to keep the balls out of it. That gets a loud hoot out of Tucker, who chokes mid-sip on his beer. Seriously, Dean insists. Balls aren't photogenic. Women don't want to see them. Hollis's laughter spills over, his breaths coming out in white puffs that float away in the night air. You put a lot of thought into this, man. It's kind of sad. I laugh, too. Wait, is that what you do when you're in the room with the door locked? Take photos of your cock? Oh, come on. Like I'm the only one who's ever taken a dick pic? You're the only one, Hollis and I say in unison. Bullshit. You guys are liars. Dean suddenly realizes that Tucker hadn't voiced a denial and wastes no time pouncing on our teammate's silence. Ha! I knew it! I arch a brow and glance at Tuck, who may or may not be blushing under the 5 inches of beard growth on his face. Really, man? Really? He offers a sheepish grin. Remember that girl I was dating last year? Sheena? Well, she texted me a picture of her tits. Said I had to return the favor. Dean's jaw falls open. Dick for tits? Dude, you got played. No way are those even remotely comparable. What's the equivalent of tits then? Hollis asks curiously. Balls, Dean declares, before taking a deep pull of the joint. He blows out a ring of smoke as everyone laughs at his remark. You just said women don't want to see balls, Hollis points out. They don't. But any idiot knows that a dick pic requires a full frontal shot in return. He rolls his eyes. It's common sense. Someone clears their throat from the sliding door behind me. Loudly. I turn around to find Hannah standing there, and my chest squeezes so tight my ribs ache. She's wearing leggings and one of Garrett's practice jerseys. Her dark hair is loose and falling over one shoulder. She looks gorgeous. And yep, I'm a total asshole friend, because suddenly I'm picturing her in my jersey, with my number scrawled across it. So much for accepting and moving on. Okay, she says slowly. Just making sure I'm not misunderstanding, but you guys are talking about sending pictures of your penises to girls? Amusement dances in her eyes as she glances around the group. Dean snorts. We sure are. And don't roll your eyes like that, Wellesley. Are you really going to stand there and tell us that G hasn't sent you pictures of his cock? I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. She sighs and rests her forearm on the edge of the door. Garrett and I are ordering pizza. Do you guys want to pitch? Oh, and we're putting on a movie in the living room. It's his turn to pick, so it'll probably be some god-awful action movie, if you guys want to watch with us. Tuck and Dean instantly pipe up with yeses, but Hollis shakes his head regretfully. Maybe next time. My last final's on Monday, so I'm spending the rest of the weekend cramming. Eek. Well, good luck. She smiles at him before releasing the doorframe and taking a step back. If you guys want to stay in the pizza toppings, you better come inside now. Otherwise, I'm going to load it with veggies. Oh, and what the hell, Logan? Those green eyes narrow at me. I thought you said you only smoke at parties. Am I going to have to beat you up now? I'd like to see you try, Wellesley. My tone is filled with humor. But the second she ducks back inside, the humor fades. Being around her is like a punch to the gut, and the thought of sitting in the living room with her and Garrett, eating pizza and watching a movie and seeing them all cuddly and in love, 100 times worse than a gut punch. It's an entire hockey team slamming you into the boards. You know what? I think I might go to Danny's thing after all. Can I catch a ride with you to the dorms? I ask Hollis. I drive over myself, but I don't know if I'll end up drinking. Dean stabs out the joint in the ashtray on top of the closed barbecue lid. You won't end up drinking, dude. Danny's RA is a total Nazi. He patrols the halls and does random room checks. No joke. I don't care. All I know is that I can't stay here. I can't hang out with Hannah and Garrett. Not until I manage to get a handle on my stupid infatuation with her. Then I won't drink. I just need a change of scenery. I've been home all day. A change of scenery, huh? Tucker's cloudy expression tells me he sees right through me. Yes, I say coolly. Got a problem with that? Tuck doesn't answer. Gritting my teeth, I mutter my goodbyes and follow Hollis out to his car. 15 minutes later, I'm in the second floor corridor of Fairview House, and it's so eerily quiet that my spirits plummet even lower. Shit. I guess the resident advisor really is a hard ass. I don't hear a peep from any of the rooms, and I can't even call Danny to find out if the party was canceled, because in my haste to escape my house, I forgot to grab my phone. I've never been to Danny's dorm before, so I stand in the hallway for a moment, trying to remember the room number he'd texted me earlier. 220? Or was it 230? I wander past each door checking the numbers, and my dilemma solves itself when I realize there isn't even a room 230. 220 it is. I wrap my knuckles against the door. Almost immediately, footsteps sound from behind it. Someone's there, at least. That's a good sign. Then the door swings open, and I find myself looking at a total stranger. Granted, she's a very pretty stranger, but a stranger nonetheless. The girl blinks in surprise when she sees me standing there. Her light brown eyes are the same shade as her hair, which hangs in a long braid over her shoulder. She's wearing loose plaid pants and a black sweatshirt with the university logo on the front. And from the utter silence in the room behind her, it's obvious I knocked on the wrong door. Hi, I say awkwardly. So, yeah, I guess this isn't Danny's room? No. Shit. I purse my lips. He said it was room 220. One of you must have gotten the number wrong then. She pauses. For what it's worth, there's no one named Danny on this floor. Is he a freshman? Junior. Oh, well then he definitely doesn't live here. This is a freshman dorm. As she speaks, she plays with the bottom of her braid, and not once does she look me in the eye. Shit, I mumble again. Are you sure your friend said it was Fairview House? I falter. I was sure, but now, not so much. Danny and I don't hang out too often, at least not on our own. Usually I see him at post-game parties, or he comes over to my place with our other teammates. I have no idea anymore, I answer with a sigh. Why don't you call him? She's still not meeting my gaze. Now she's staring down at her striped wool socks as if they're the most fascinating things she's ever seen. I left my phone at home. Fuck. As I mull over my options, I run a hand through my hair. It's growing out, and I desperately need to get it buzzed, but I keep forgetting to do it. Is it cool if I use yours? Sure. Even though she looks hesitant, she opens the door wider and gestures for me to come in. Her room is a typical double with two of everything. But while one side is neat as a pin, the other is slob central. Clearly, this girl and her roommate have very different philosophies about tidiness. For some reason, I'm not surprised when she walks over to the tidy side. She definitely seems like she'd be the neat one. She goes to the desk and unplugs a cell phone from its charger, then holds it out to me. Here. The second the phone exchanges hands, she creeps back toward the door. You don't have to stand all the way over there, I say dryly. Unless you're debating making a run for it. Her cheeks turn pink. Grinning, I swipe the phone screen and pull up the keypad. Don't worry, gorgeous. I'm just using your phone. I'm not going to murder you. Oh, I know that. Or at least I think I know that, she stammers. I mean, you seem like a decent guy, but then again, lots of serial killers probably seem decent too when you first meet them. Did you know that Ted Bundy was actually really charming? Her eyes widen. How messed up is that? Imagine, you're walking along one day and you meet this really cute, charming guy, and you're like, oh my God, he's perfect. And then you're over at his place, and you find a trophy dungeon in the basement with skin suits and Barbie dolls with the eyes ripped out, and Jesus, I cut in. Did anyone ever tell you that you talk a lot? Her cheeks are even redder now. Sorry. Sometimes I babble when I'm nervous. I shoot her another grin. I make you nervous? No. Well, maybe a little. I mean, I don't know you and, yeah, stranger danger and all that. Though I'm sure you're not dangerous, she adds hastily. But, you know. Right. Ted Bundy, I supply, fighting hard not to laugh. She fidgets with her braid again, and her averted gaze gives me the opportunity to study her more closely. Man, she really is pretty. Not drop-dead gorgeous or anything, but she has a fresh-faced girl-next-door look that's seriously appealing. Freckles on her nose, delicate features, and smooth, creamy skin right out of a makeup commercial. Are you going to call? I blink, suddenly remembering why I came inside in the first place. I look down at the phone in my hand, and now I'm examining the number pad as intently as I was examining her moments before. Here's a tip. You use your fingers to dial, and then you press send. I lift my head, and her barely restrained grin summons a laugh from my throat. Great tip, I agree. But, I let out a glum breath. I just realized I don't know his number. It's saved in my phone. Shit. Is this my punishment for inappropriately fantasizing about Garrett's girlfriend? Getting stranded on a Friday night with no phone or ride home? I guess I deserve it. Fuck it. I'll call a cab. I finally decide. Luckily, I know the number for the campus taxi service, so I dial that instead, only to be placed on hold immediately. As elevator music chirps in my ear, I smother a groan. You're on hold, huh? Yep. I glance over at her again. I'm Logan, by the way. Thanks for letting me use your phone. No problem. She pauses. I'm Grace. A click sounds in my ear, but instead of the dispatcher's voice coming on the line, there's another click followed by another swell of music. I'm not surprised, though. It's Friday night, the busiest night for the campus taxis. Who knows how long I'll have to wait. I sink down on the edge of one of the beds, the one that's perfectly made, and try to remember the number for the cab service in Hastings, the town where most of the off-campus housing is, including my townhouse. But I'm drawing a blank, so I sigh and endure some more elevator music. My gaze drifts to the open laptop on the other side of the bed, and when I notice what's on the screen, I look at Grace in surprise. Are you watching Die Hard? Die Hard 2, actually. She looks embarrassed. I'm having a Die Hard night. I just finished the first one. Do you have a thing for Bruce Willis or something? That makes her laugh. Nope. I just like old action movies. Last weekend I watched the Lethal Weapon franchise. The music in my ear stops again, then starts over, bringing a curse to my lips. I hang up and turn to Grace. Do you mind if I use your computer to get the number for the taxi service in Hastings? Maybe I'll have better luck there. Sure. After a beat of hesitation, she sits next to me and reaches for the laptop. Let me pull up a browser for you. When she goes to minimize the video, the movie unpauses, and sound blasts out of the speakers. As the opening fight scene in the airport fills the computer screen, I immediately lean closer to watch it. Oh shit, this is such a great fight sequence. I know, right? Grace exclaims. I love it. Actually, I love this whole movie. I don't care what anyone says, it's awesome. Obviously not as good as the first one, but it's really not as bad as people think. She's about to pause the movie, but I intercept her hand. Can we finish watching this scene first? Her expression fills with surprise. Yeah, okay. She visibly swallows, adding, if you want, you can stay and watch the whole movie. Her cheeks flush the moment she voices the invitation. Unless you have somewhere you need to be. I think it over for a second before shaking my head. Nah, I have nowhere else to be. I can hang out for a while. Really, what's the alternative? Go home and watch Hannah and Garrett hand-feed pizza to each other and sneak kisses during the movie? Oh, okay, Grace says warily. Cool. I chuckle. Were you expecting me to say no? Kind of, she admits. Why would I? Seriously, what guy turns down Die Hard? The only thing that could sweeten this deal is if you offered me some booze. I don't have any. She stops to think. But I've got a whole bag of gummy bears hidden in my desk drawer. Marry me, I say instantly. Laughing, she wanders over to the desk, opens the bottom drawer, and sure enough, pulls out a huge bag of candy. As I slide up the bed and lean back on the stack of pillows at the head of it, Grace kneels in front of the mini fridge next to the desk and asks, water or Pepsi? Pepsi, please. She hands me the massive bag of gummy bears and a can of soda, then settles on the bed beside me and positions the laptop on the mattress between us. I shove a gummy bear in my mouth and focus my gaze on the screen. Okay, then. This definitely wasn't the way I expected this evening to go. But hell, might as well roll with it.
Chapter 3. Grace. John Logan is in my dorm room. No, John Logan is on my bed. I am so not prepared for this. In fact, I'm tempted to secretly text Ramona with an SOS and beg for advice because I have no idea what to do or say. On the plus side, we're watching a movie, which means I don't have to do or say anything except stare at the laptop, laugh at the appropriate one-liners, and pretend that the hottest guy at Briar isn't sitting on my bed. And he's not just physically hot. He's also temperature hot. Seriously, his body heat is like a blast from a furnace. And since I'm already hot and tingly from his mere presence, the warmth he's radiating is starting to make me sweat. Trying to be inconspicuous, I wiggle out of my sweatshirt and tuck it beside me, but the movement causes Logan to turn his head toward me. Those deep blue eyes focus on my tight tank top, resting briefly on my chest. Oh God, he's checking out my boobs. And even though I'm only rocking a B cup, the way his expression smolders, you'd think I had a porn star rack. When he realizes I've caught him staring, he just winks and turns back to the screen. It's official. I've actually met a guy who can pull off a wink. Paying attention to the movie is impossible. My eyes are on the screen, but my mind is somewhere else, focused wholly on the guy beside me. He's a lot bigger than I thought. Impossibly broad shoulders, muscular chest, long legs stretching out in front of him. I've seen him play hockey, so I know he's aggressively physical on the ice, and having that powerful body inches from mine shoots a thrill up my spine. He looks so much older and more masculine than the freshman guys I've hung out with all year. Well, duh, he's a junior. Right, but he seems older than that, too. He's got this whole manly thing going on that makes me want to rip his clothes off and lick him like an ice cream cone. I pop a gummy bear in my mouth, hoping the act of chewing will bring some much-needed moisture to my dry throat. On the screen, McLean's wife is on the plane arguing with the pesky news reporter who caused trouble for the McLeans in the first movie, and suddenly Logan glances over at me, curiosity flickering in his expression.
Hey, do you think you could land a plane if you had no other choice?
I laugh. I thought you said you've seen this movie. You know she doesn't have to land the plane, right?
No, I know that. But it made me wonder what I'd do if I was on a plane and I was the only one who could land it.
He sighs.
I don't think I'd be able to do it.
I'm surprised he's so quick to admit that. Other guys might try to act all macho and scoff about how they could land that thing in their sleep or something. Me neither, I confess. If anything, I see myself making it worse. I'd probably accidentally depressurize the cabin by touching the wrong control. Actually, no. I'm scared of heights, so I'm pretty sure I'd pass out the second I stepped into the cockpit and looked out the windshield. He chuckles, and the husky sound sets off another round of tingles.
I might be able to fly a helicopter,
he muses.
That's probably easier than a jet, right?
Maybe. Honestly, I know nothing about aviation. It's my turn to sigh. Don't tell anyone. But sometimes I'm not sure I understand how planes even stay in the air. He laughs, and then we both focus on the movie again, and I give myself a mental pat on the back. I just had an entire conversation with a cute guy without babbling incoherently. I deserve a frickin' gold star for that. Don't get me wrong, I'm still nervous as all get out, but something about Logan puts me at ease. He's so laid back. And besides, it's hard to feel intimidated by a guy when he's chomping away on gummy bears. As we watch the movie, my gaze darts toward him every few seconds to admire his chiseled profile. His nose is slightly crooked, as if it's been broken once or twice before, and the sexy curve of his lips is pure temptation. I want to kiss him so badly I can't think straight. God, and I'm such a loser because kissing me is probably the last thing on his mind. He stuck around to watch Die Hard, not to fool around with a freshman who compared him to Ted frickin' Bundy an hour ago. I force myself to concentrate on the film, but I'm already dreading the moment it ends, because then Logan will have to leave. But when the credits scroll up on the screen, he doesn't make a single move to get up. Instead, he looks over and asks,
"So what's your deal?"
I furrow my brow. "What do you mean?"
"It's Friday night. How come you're sitting around watching action movies?"
The question makes me bristle. "What's wrong with that?"
"Nothing."
He shrugs.
"I'm just wondering why you're not out partying or something."
"I was at a party last night." "Don't remind him you saw him. Don't remind him you saw him." "I saw you there, by the way." He seems startled.
"You did?"
"Yeah, at the Omega Phi house."
"Huh, I don't remember seeing you."
He gives me a sheepish look.
"I don't remember much, actually. I got pretty shit-faced."
It stings a little that he doesn't remember our encounter outside the bathroom, but I quickly chastise myself for feeling insulted. He was drunk and he'd just hooked up with someone else. Of course I hadn't made an impression on him.
"Did you have fun at the party?"
For the first time since he walked into my dorm room, his tone contains an awkward note as if he's trying to make small talk and isn't comfortable with it. "Sure, I guess." I pause. Actually, I take that back. It was fun until I totally humiliated myself in front of this guy. The discomfort on his face dissolves as he chuckles.
"Yeah, what'd you do?"
"I babbled a lot." I offer a little shrug. I have a really bad habit of doing that around guys.
"You're not babbling right now,"
he points out. "Yeah, now. Do you not remember the serial killer rant I gave you 2 hours ago?"
"Trust me, I remember."
His answering grin speeds up my pulse. God, he's got a sexy smile. Slightly crooked, and every time he flashes it, his eyes twinkle playfully.
"I don't make you nervous anymore, do I?"
"No." I'm lying. He absolutely makes me nervous. He's John fucking Logan, one of the most popular guys at Briar, and I'm Grace fucking Ivers, one of thousands of girls who are crushing on him. His gaze travels over me again, a hot, lingering perusal that crackles along my skin like an electric current. This time, there's no mistaking the interest in his eyes. Should I make a move? I should make a move, right? Lean closer or something. Kiss him. Or maybe ask him to kiss me? My brain races back to my high school days trying to pinpoint how all those kisses happened. If the guys I locked lips with made the first move? Or if it was a mutual, yeah, we're going to kiss now sort of thing. Except none of those kisses were with guys even half as gorgeous as this one.
Do you want me to go now?
His gruff voice startles me and I realize I've been staring at him for almost a full minute without saying a single word. My mouth is so dry I have to swallow a few times before answering. No, I mean, you can stay if you want. We can watch something else or... I don't get to finish that sentence because he slides closer and touches my cheek and my vocal cords freeze as my heart rate skyrockets. John Logan is touching my cheek. The pads of his fingers are calloused, a rough scrape against my skin, and he smells so good I feel lightheaded when I inhale the faint scent of his aftershave. He lightly strokes my cheekbone, and I have to stop myself from purring like an affection-starved cat. What are you doing? I whisper.
Well, you were looking at me like you wanted me to kiss you.
His blue eyes become heavy-lidded.
So I was thinking I might do that.
Chapter 4. Grace. My heartbeat is out of control. A fast drumbeat in my ears, a frantic hammering against my ribs. Oh my God, he wants to kiss me?
Unless I misread the moment,
he prompts. I gulp, desperately trying to control my careening pulse. Talking is not an option. My throat has clamped shut. Despite the fact that my motor skills aren't operating at full capacity, I manage to shake my head. His laughter heats the air between us.
Is that a no to misreading the moment or a no to me kissing you?
I'm miraculously able to produce an entire sentence in response. I want you to kiss me. He's still chuckling as he moves closer, stretching on his side beside me and gently nudging me onto my back. Every muscle in my body tenses with anticipation as he hovers over me, and when he rests one hand on my hip, I tremble hard enough for him to notice. A smile curves his lips. Lips that are getting closer and closer to my lips. Inches away. Millimeters away. And then his mouth brushes mine and holy shit. I'm kissing John Logan. Almost immediately, my mind is flooded with so many thoughts it's hard to focus on just one. I hear my father's endless lectures about respecting myself and behaving properly and not going wild in college. And then there's my mother's cheery voice ordering me to have fun and live life to the fullest. And somewhere in between, an excited voice is shouting, "You're kissing John Logan! You're kissing John Logan!" His mouth is warm, his lips firm as he kisses me. Gently at first, a soft, sensual tease that makes me whimper. He licks my bottom lip, nips lightly at it before the tip of his tongue touches the seam of my lips. He tastes like candy, and for some reason that makes me whimper again. When his tongue finally slides inside my mouth, he lets out a raspy groan that vibrates through me and settles in my core. Kissing Logan is the single most incredible thing I've ever experienced. Forget that family vacation to Egypt when I was 9. The glory of the pyramids and temples and the frickin' Sphinx is nothing compared to the feel of this guy's lips on mine. Our tongues meet, and he makes another low, husky sound, gliding one hand up my body to cup my left breast. Oh, shit. Boob groping alert. I thought we were just going to make out, but now we're fooling around. I'm not wearing a bra under my tank top, so when his thumb brushes the very thin fabric and presses down on my nipple, it sends a bolt of heat from the tips of my breasts right down to my clit. My entire body is hot and achy, tight with excitement. Logan's tongue explores my mouth as he rubs my distended nipple, his hips moving slightly against my hip. His erection is like a hot brand on the side of my thigh, and I'm unbelievably turned on by the knowledge that I'm turning him on. Breathing heavily, he wrenches our mouths apart.
Should I be worried that your roommate is going to walk in on us?
No, she's not coming home tonight. She went to some bar in town, and then she's planning on crashing with this girl, Caitlin, from Kappa Beta. Which I think is a really bad idea because the last time she went out with Caitlin, they almost got arrested for public drunkenness. But then Ramona flirted with a cop and Logan shuts me up with another kiss.
No would have sufficed,
he murmurs against my lips. Then he reaches for my hand and places it directly on the hard bulge in his pants. In the same breath, he cups my sex over my PJs. Oh, crap. Downstairs action alert. I'm not worried about my response to his hand. One slow glide of his palm is all it takes for a burst of pleasure to erupt inside me. Nope, it's my hand that triggers the rush of nervousness. The hand that's currently stroking the erection straining behind Logan's zipper. I've given hand jobs before, plus a few blowjobs that I know were a huge success because, well, semen and all that. But I don't have enough experience to consider myself an expert penis wrangler or anything. And all those past penis encounters involved one guy, my high school boyfriend, Brandon, who was equally inexperienced. If the rumors I've heard about Logan are true, then this guy has slept with half the girls at Briar. Sounds like an insanely high statistic, so I'm sure it's not accurate. But he's definitely hooked up with more people than I have.
Is this okay?
He asks as he strokes between my legs. I nod and stroke him again, and a tortured moan slips out of his mouth.
Fuck, hold on.
He shifts on the mattress and my heart stops when he unzips his pants. He eases them down just low enough to free his erection from his boxers, then tugs on the waistbands of my PJs and underwear. A second later, his hand grazes my bare sex and my hips lift involuntarily, seeking closer contact. Logan teases the tip of his index finger over my clit.
Better,
he says, his voice thick and raspy. So much better, and so good it makes my head spin, limiting my response to a breathy mumble of nonsense. Smiling at my incoherent answer, he leans in and kisses me again. With his free hand, he grasps my right hand and brings it to his erection, gently wrapping my trembling fingers around the shaft. He's long and hard, his smooth, hot flesh sliding easily inside my closed fist. My body is on fire. Waves of arousal swell in my core, and when he pushes his middle finger inside me, my inner muscles clamp around it, the pressure so intense I forget how to breathe. We don't stop kissing, not even to come up for air. We're both panting, our tongues tangling and our hands hard at work. His thumb presses on my clit as his finger moves inside me, and the pleasure spiraling through me gathers in strength, a tight knot of anticipation that causes the movement of my hips to become even more erratic. Minutes pass, or maybe hours. I have no idea, because I'm too caught up in the incredible sensations. I stroke his erection, squeezing the blunt head on each upstroke until his hips start moving too, and a rough command leaves his mouth.
Faster.
I quicken the pace, and he thrusts into my fist with a low groan, his breath tickling my lips as he breaks the kiss. His eyes are closed, his features taut and his teeth digging into his bottom lip.
I'm gonna come,
he mumbles. Excitement ripples between my legs, and I know he can feel how wet I am because he groans again and his finger plunges deeper, faster. A few seconds later, he sags into me, his forehead resting on my shoulder as his hips flex forward one last time before going still. As wetness spurts onto my hand, his eyes slowly open and the sleepy pleasure swimming in them takes my breath away. Holy shit. I don't think I've ever seen anything sexier than the sight of John Logan right after he's had an orgasm. His breathing is still labored as he meets my gaze. Did you come? Crap, right. His finger is still lodged inside me, no longer moving but a reminder of the orgasm I'd been about to reach before I got distracted by the way he looked when he was coming, the restless grind of his hips and the sexy sounds he made. But I'm too embarrassed to admit I didn't finish, and since he already did, I feel awkward asking him to keep going. So I nod and say, uh-huh, of course. A shadow of doubt passes through his eyes, but before I can blink, he sits up abruptly and says,
I should go.
I ignore the equal doses of disappointment and irritation that tighten my belly. Seriously? He can't even stick around for a few minutes of post-hookup small talk? What a prince. It's even more awkward now. He grabs a tissue from the box on the end table and cleans up. I pretend to be cool and composed as I pull up my pants and watch him do the same. I even manage a casual smile as he uses my phone to call a cab. Fortunately, he gets through right away this time, which means the awkwardness doesn't last long. I walk him to the door, where he hesitates for a beat.
Thanks for having me over,
he says gruffly.
I had fun.
Yeah, sure. Me too. A moment later, he's gone.
Chapter 5. Logan. I walk into my bedroom after my morning shower to hear my phone ringing. And since everyone my age texts instead of calls, I know exactly who it is without having to check the screen. Hey, Mom, I greet her, gripping the edge of my towel as I head for the dresser.
Mom? Holy shish kebab. So it's true. I mean, I thought I gave birth to a beautiful baby boy 21 years ago, but that seems like a distant memory. Because if I did have a son, he'd probably call me more than once a month, right?
I laugh despite the needle of guilt pricking my chest. She's right. I've been a crappy son lately. Too busy with the postseason and term papers to call her as often as I should. I'm sorry, I say with genuine remorse. It always gets crazy busy at the end of the semester.
I know. That's why I haven't been bugging you. Are you studying hard?